passing, note the bedfellows assigned to religious studies. Art history and classics. Two lovely disciplines, but surely there is more to the religious life of people in New Zealand than can fit under the heading of art history and classics. It's a strange arrangement. Anyway, in the current academic year, Jeff is course coordinator for Rally 107, that is Religion, Law and Politics, and he's the course lecturer for Rally 424, which studies in religion and society. His research focuses on religion in New Zealand society and history, and more broadly, on the history of Christianity. Recent writing has included work on religion and welfare, alcohol, peacemaking, missions, secularisation, politics, and childhood. Neatly fitting in with both the themes of this conference and the interests of the Sea of Faith, Jeff also researches contemporary religious change. And if there's one thing that we can be certain of at the moment, that contemporary religious change is in fact taking place. Due for imminent publication is the book that he has coordinated with Stuart Longy with the title Sacred Histories in Secular New Zealand. If you visit the book table over there, you can buy advanced copies of them. There's just a few on the end there. And is... Oh, there he is. Gavin is there. Pay through Gavin. Any further questions that prevents us taking off at this stage? Not at all. Please welcome Dr. Jeffrey Trout.
Good morning, everybody. Noel, I should let you know that in addition to classics and art history, we also have museum studies as part of where religion fits. So, yeah, I agree, though. There's more to religion than that as well. Well, thank you for the invitation to participate. It's lovely to be here and lovely to share some material with you. It's a particular pleasure to be here as a member of the Religious Studies program and to be sharing with Lloyd with the particular connection that we have at Victoria through Lloyd, through your work. And I would have never thought that one day I'd actually be speaking with you and speaking in a room with you. So as Noel has indicated, my background is primarily as a historian of Christianity in New Zealand. That's where my master's and my PhD studies were both in New Zealand Christian history. I have studied theology, but I don't see myself as a theologian. Neither am I a pastor, although I've had some experience in that sphere in a past life. The religious studies context has been quite a remarkable one for me. Coming as a historian into the religious studies program, I found to be a remarkably expansive and enriching environment to work in, and it's partly that interdisciplinary context that we work in, and partly also the encouragement to listen to different voices to who historians typically listen to, and to be much more alert to what's happening in the contemporary world. I think my antenna have become much more focused on contemporary change, and so it's in that area that I'm wanting to offer some observations this morning. A lot of that arises from another project that I'm involved in. My main projects at the moment are looking at religious contributions to peacemaking and peace traditions in New Zealand, and I'm working on a number of volumes related to that at the moment. But I've been drawn in recent years into involvement with a big longitudinal social survey called the New Zealand Attitudes and Values Study. And so I'll be drawing a little bit upon New Zealand census data and some findings that we have from the NZAVS that I'll explain a little bit more as we go on. And I see what I'm offering is some stuff for us to ruminate and some stuff for us to think a bit more carefully about the context we're in, the religious state we're in. The more I look at the numbers, I'm not great with numbers, and that may be part of the problem, but I work with other people who are very good at with the numbers. The more that I look at them, the less confident I am that I understand the religious state that we're in. There are all sorts of complex and interesting things happening religiously in New Zealand, and I hope that by examining these this morning, we'll get a bit more of a sense and provocation about these dynamics. So to begin, diversity in religion, and I'm sorry that the text will be quite small, but hopefully you'll be able to follow from what I'm saying anyway. I'm sorry that it's come up so small. Diversity in religion is a given. It's a fact, even though we often end up talking about religion in singular kind of terms, or we simplify what we're talking about when we refer to religious traditions. Diversity is a fact. But the nature of religious diversity in New Zealand has changed to become much more apparent in recent decades. It's also become more widely celebrated, I think, and authorised to some extent. Earlier, diversity in New Zealand tended to be intra-religious in nature. It was diversity within Christianity. And so the 1901 census listed over 100 different kinds of Christianity that New Zealanders identified with. About 95% of New Zealanders in 1901 identified as Christian. Most of those were linked with what we called the Big Four, you know, the Anglican, Presbyterian, Catholic, and Methodist. But even within those four traditions, there was always considerable diversity. And in fact, what the census tended to do was to lump outlier responses under those four categories, and so gave a much sharper sense of homogeneity than that was actually ever the case on the ground. So if somebody said they were a Protestant, the census enumerators didn't like that. They just called them Anglican. And so this is part of what bolstered the strength of particular traditions in terms of that sense, those census numbers that became so important in talking about religious identification. Patterns of migration, of course, affected the shape of diversity in New Zealand, and so we came from particular parts of the world bringing particular traditions with us. Those patterns of diversity also shaped the very early development of the secular principle in New Zealand. And so from the 19th century, there was this very clear framing of state policy as not preferencing any particular tradition. Secularity in that context was primarily about recognition of diversity rather than exclusion of religion. And that's a dimension of the original debate about the secular principle in New Zealand that I think is often lost, particularly I find among my younger students don't recognise these different meanings of secularity and the kind of trajectory that the secular principle in New Zealand came from. Patterns of diversity have changed, of course, and particularly in the post-World War II period, there have been two big stories, I think, that have shaped the changes in religious diversity that we've experienced. And again, migration and patterns of migration is one of those factors. The fostering of non-European migration changed the shape of religious diversity in New Zealand. And that, of course, flowed from government policy. It was the Immigration Act of 1987 and subsequently the 1991 Amendment Act that marked the key turning point in the shift from intra-Christian diversity to a broader religious pluralism. From that time, selection of immigrants on the basis of nationality became less favoured. So British and European migrants were no longer the priority, but assets and skill contributions became key. And so at that point, money from Southeast Asia in particular, money and migrants from that part of the world came in, and a new kind of religious pluralization became much more evident. So this followed from government policy shifts, from economic priorities. The other main shift, of course, is related to the deinstitutionalization of religion and disaffiliation from the traditional churches. And that's a point I'll return to a little bit later, teasing out some things about that. Whatever else that pattern indicates, in religious terms, it's evidently associated with a greater sense of autonomy, people's sense of being in charge of their own religious or spiritual stories, and much less and lighter attachment to institutional identification. Those who do identify religiously are often more lightly attached to particular traditions. The basic story represented in the 2013 census, I suspect, is fairly well known in some respects, but I think it's worth stating. In broad terms, affiliation in New Zealand currently breaks down as follows. 45% of the total population, so remember a bunch of people, about a quarter of a million or more, don't actually answer the religion question, but of those who do, the number of in all of these categories is slightly higher, but of the total population, 45% state that they are Christians of one kind or another, including a little over 1% who identify as Māori Christians. 38.5% claim no religion, 2.1% are Hindu, 1.4% Buddhist, and 1.1% Muslim. The Sikh community is currently one of the fastest growing communities in New Zealand. Its number doubled, or more than doubled, between 2006 and 2013, but at present it remains just 0.5% of the total population. Between 2006 and 2013, the largest group change was simply a net switch between Christians and no religionists. So you can see the blue column, or the blue colouring, is those identifying as Christian, the inner circle being 2006, the outer circle 2013. And essentially, the changes are happening between Christian identification and the no religionist. That's where the bulk of movement is taking place. And roughly the switch is about 1% per annum disaffiliating from Christianity to non-religion. Essentially, that's the numbers game. It's roughly 1% less each year from Christianity, roughly 1% more non-religionists. That, of course, is a very raw picture. The actual situation on the ground is much more mobility in the way that people identify their religious selves. These are net changes that we're talking about. Some of the data that we're finding from the NZAVS, we have a couple of studies that are going to be coming out fairly soon, highlight massive changes on a year-by-year basis in the way that people identify themselves religiously. In some waves of our data, we see 20 and 30% difference year on year about people identifying themselves. One year I'm a no religionist, next year I'm a Catholic. And so it's going in all kinds of directions, but the net change is this gradual disaffiliation from Christianity. We shouldn't confuse this with a linear trajectory that people are just losing their religion. This is a net effect, but it's a far more mobile and fluid situation in terms of the way people see their religious identity. The change in other religions is quite prominent, and I think shapes the way we think about religious diversity and the New Zealand context. But in terms of the numbers, that group of the other religions grew by just 1% of the population in that seven-year period, from about 5% to about 6%. Still very significant, but maybe not as substantial as we may sometimes think. Among Christians, it's pretty clear that denominational identification is collapsing. And I've been doing a bit of work on this group called the Christian NFDs, the Christians who don't give any further definition of themselves except that they are Christian. That group is growing in number and currently represents about 5% of the population. Twice as many as there are Baptists in the country, many more than there are Methodists. It's quite a significant, substantial group, the Christian NFDs. Mostly conservative, mostly evangelical and Pentecostal in the orientation, but also including many others who switch allegiances or who have multiple denominational allegiances or members of union parishes, other kinds of factors play into that. But what's really clear is that young New Zealanders and young religious identifiers overwhelmingly do not identify with denomination. They see themselves as Christians if they identify with Christianity, but not at all with denominations. There's a very weak sense of what the traditional institutions mean and stand for. I can talk about that more later if you're interested. Ethnic churches are growing. Ethnic forms of Christianity within that space are becoming much more significant. I don't know if you're aware, Wellingtonians, that there are at least three Indian Pentecostal churches in the suburb of Newtown alone. There are at least three African Pentecostal churches in the Hutt. There is a massive proliferation of these kinds of ethnically based forms of Christianity in New Zealand, and that landscape is changing rapidly. That ethnic story is actually a very interesting and significant one, and I think it's worth pondering because it may not conform to some of the assumptions or widely held expectations that we might have about the way that ethnicity and religious identification work. For example, some of us may be surprised to know that there is almost no difference at all between Māori and European Pākehā rates of religious affiliation. Māori identify with Christianity at almost exactly the same rate as European and Pākehā do. They also identify as no religionists at almost exactly the same rate that Pākehā do. In terms of, if we look at where people come from and the way that they identify religiously, there are some interesting patterns in the census too. Sorry, this is, if it's hard to make it out, just enjoy the colours while they're there. Of those born in Europe and North America, of those born in Europe and North America, almost all identify either with Christianity or no religion. Now, we tend to think of North America as having a highly religious reputation, but in New Zealand, migrants from North America have pretty high rates of no religion. 44% of census respondents born in North America claim no religion. Maybe they're refugees, I don't know. I don't know. Among Asians, 31% claim no religion, but it's the rate of Chinese non-religion that lifts that rate quite substantially. 62% of Chinese claim no religion compared to 31% of Asian New Zealanders overall. Of those who claim Asian ethnicity, that is compared to being born in Asia but claiming an Asian ethnicity, just under 30% are no religionists, which is nearly the same proportion as those of Asian ethnicity who claim to be Christian. So 30% of Asian-born New Zealanders are Christian. By far the largest single group of Asian, by far the largest group, a religious group among Asians. So there are three times as many Asian Christians in New Zealand as there are Asian Buddhists. Christian affiliation is high among some respondents from the Middle East, from Latin America and Africa. And notably in Africa, 60% claim Christian identification, Latin America 75%. Among Iranian respondents, 40% claim to be Muslim, 25% claim no religion. There is a cohort of those from the Middle East, NFD, so no further definition, just state that they come from the Middle East. Of those, two-thirds are Muslim, but 20% are Christian. Pacific Island-born census respondents are perhaps more diverse than might be expected. 18% claim to be Hindu, 6% Muslim. And so this is obviously reflecting the impact of the shape of migration from Fiji and its influence in the New Zealand scene. Only 3.9% of those claiming Pacific Island ethnicity claim no religion, to 4% no religionists among the Pacific Island people. But among the New Zealand-born Pacific Islanders, 16.5% claim no religion. So there's clear differences in the age cohorts and transformations going on within that community as well. So I think the picture here is much complex and much more fluid and interesting than we might presume in terms of people's religious identification. Migrant religion is changing the religious landscape significantly, but the patterns are highly variegated. They're not simple, straightforward ones. Now, it's well known that levels of no religion in New Zealand are high, very high when compared with other similar nations. And in the New Zealand census, as I've mentioned, 38% of New Zealanders fit this category, 42% of all those who answered the religion question. And you can see the comparisons with levels in the UK, Canada, Australia, where it's closer to 20%. In New Zealand, as I've mentioned, the rate of no religion is growing by about 1% a year. Interestingly, that same number has started to kick in the US. The Pew survey data is indicating that whilst it's been very slow, North America has been much more religious in terms of identification than New Zealand. The Pew data suggests now that the no religion cohort is growing by about 1% per annum there too. So there are changes going on elsewhere. Most of the data we have, interestingly, suggests that there are fewer declared atheists among the no religion cohort than we may imagine. Perhaps between 10 and 20% of those who claim no religion see themselves as atheists. So no religion, around 38%, 10 to 20% of that group see themselves as atheists. So we shouldn't confuse the no religion category with that particular outlook. Indeed, some of the NZAVS data highlights that people who claim no religion have quite complex and interesting values and ideas about religion and spirituality. So, very quickly, this data here, the question on the left says, do you believe in God? And the question on the right is, do you believe in some form of spirit or life force? And the numbers, the different bars on the graph represent the responses to a secondary question, which is, how important is your stated religion to how you see yourself? So there's a strength of commitment identified. And so you can see along the bottom, people who claim no religion don't tend to believe in God. Okay, there's a the God belief among the low religious identification is very low. But actually, there's a diversity of belief there. People who don't believe in a God very strongly. People who claim no religion, essentially the 0, 1, 2, 3, have quite high rates of spirit, life force belief. The substantial levels of that kind of life force belief, even amongst those who claim no religion at all, or whose religious identification is very, very weak. About 71% of people in the NZAVS believe in spirit or life force, some kind of transcendent being. So there are complex views amongst no religionists about spiritual realities. Thoroughgoing materialism is not as widespread as the no religion category might lead us to believe. Now, what I'd like to do is to draw out now a few things that we're finding about religious communities and what religion does for people out of the NZAVS study. The NZAVS study is not a religion study. It is a study that was set up by psychologists, one of whom is a graduate of religious studies at Victoria. And so when he set it up, he had a bit of an interest in religious questions, and he had a chat with some of us on the program about what might be useful to include. And so two of us in the program have continued to be very involved with him in the project subsequently. So he did ask a few questions about religion in the early survey, and some of those have been expanded as it's gone. Essentially, the NZAVS aims to be a 20-year longitudinal study. It samples from the New Zealand electoral roll, a random sampling, began in 2009 with a sample of about 6,500 people. There are currently about 20,000 people who annually respond to the NZAVS survey. Now, in global terms, this is a massive survey, and it's extraordinary insights into the New Zealand population are accessible through that. The study's also been very prolific. There's a lot of research coming out of the study, only some of it drawing on the religion questions. It's a representative sample, so you don't need to see the details, but essentially there's a slight oversampling of women, of European and Māori, and of the major urban centres. But to all intents and purposes, it is pretty closely representative, the people who respond to the survey, to the national population. Is anybody in the room actually on the survey? Is anybody? Yeah. It's almost inevitable that there's somebody. So you'll be able to confirm that it's a bit of an ordeal doing it, right? So you can see it's a very dense survey. It's about 8 pages worth of questions. And the aim is really to be looking at issues... That's not me, is it? No. Issues of well-being and within the community are really what's driving the survey. But because there are certain questions asked about religious identification and how strongly people identify religiously, we're able to make a bunch of interesting inferences and correlations. And so most of what I want to highlight is that one of the things that the NZAVS data is telling us is that this simple yes, no, are you religious question is almost useless at getting to the nub of what really matters in terms of how religion and religious community mobilises its resources and the differences that being part of a religious community might make. And so, but what does give us, what does cut at a serious joint is the strength of people's identification with their religious tradition. Whatever that tradition might be, how strongly people identify with that tells us actually quite a lot. Interesting patterns fall out of that strength of identification. So the NZAVS gets at that question by asking these two questions. Do you, what if any religion do you have, and how strong, how important is that religion to how you see yourself? So on a scale of 1 to 7. And the short story out of this is that it's kind of complex how religious identification mobilizes. One of the studies that we have done looks at the question of attitudes to immigrants, and particularly attitudes to Muslim migrants in New Zealand. And so the NZAVS asked these questions about how warmly or otherwise people feel towards particular kinds of groups, including ethnic groups, overweight people, immigrants in general, and immigrants from particular types, Chinese, Indians, Muslims. And I don't know, if I was to ask you what you think the responses to that might be, I don't know, what would you imagine the responses would be from New Zealanders about how they feel about these different groups? Actually, on a global scale, New Zealanders are relatively warm to immigrants. But there are clearly groups who New Zealanders do not feel warmly towards. You can see down the bottom, somewhere below 4, Muslims and Arabs. At about 4.5, immigrants in general, attitudes, warmth towards Māori, about 5 on a scale of 7, and European closer to 6. So there's quite big disparities in the feelings of New Zealanders towards particular groups. Is that kind of what you'd expect? Yeah. Well, it is better than in many parts of the world, but it's clear that some groups don't fare well in terms of New Zealanders' attitudes. Interestingly, Asians, the attitudes or warmth towards Asians sits at about 4.3 currently. It's about the standard rate for immigrants in general, and warmth towards Asians has been increasing a little bit each year, which is a kind of interesting turnaround. I want to drill into the question about Muslims in particular, because I think this is a particularly interesting one. Now, we've got to remember that Muslims have been in New Zealand for a long time. Since the 1870s, the first Muslim New Zealanders arrived. And in fact, the first waves of Muslim New Zealanders were from India, Gujarati shopkeepers in particular, mostly based around South Auckland. And really in the last 20 or so years, those numbers have increased more significantly as migration patterns have diversified. Muslim New Zealanders come from roughly 4 main areas of origin, roughly equal proportions. Those who are born in New Zealand, those who are born in the Pacific Islands, primarily Fiji, those who come from Asia, and those who come from the Middle East. Now, we might question, is there a religious basis to the hostility towards Muslims? Is it a kind of Christian Islamophobia or a kind of latent Christian Islamophobia that drives this hostility? A la Samuel Huntington's Clash of Civilizations, there's this great division in the world between Christian civilization and the Muslim world. Is that what's really behind this? Well, we know that prejudice is driven by a bunch of things. We know that the more educated people are, the higher their socioeconomic status, the more they live in proximity with others, the less prejudiced they are. Older people and people who are unemployed tend to exhibit more prejudice. These are very well attested factors driving prejudice in studies all over the place. And the New Zealand AVS data pretty much bears that out. Those factors are all significant. But perhaps surprisingly, one of the things that the NZAVS data shows us is that actually religious New Zealanders, highly religiously identified New Zealanders, tend to be more tolerant, express less prejudice towards migrants generally, and Muslim migrants in particular, than no religionists and religion and New Zealanders generally. And that effect strengthens the higher people's religious identification, the more strongly they see themselves as religious, the more important their religious identity is to them, the higher the greater the warmth expressed to Muslims. Now, I suspect this is quite a contrary finding to what most people would expect, that it would be rabid Christians who would have the most reason to be the most hostile to Muslims. But it's not what the data seems to be suggesting. Interestingly, the group that is the most, or expresses the least warmth, let's put it that way, to Muslims, are those who identify with religion, but just a little bit. They see themselves as religious, but not strongly so. They're less warm than no religionists, and markedly less warm to migrants and Muslims in particular, than strongly identified religious people. One of the other findings that's kind of strange is the way that Muslim and Arab is confounded in the way that people respond to this question. In New Zealand, people see Muslims as Arab, even though only 25% of New Zealand Muslims come from the Middle East. And actually, not all Middle Eastern Muslims are Arab either. Some of the biggest cohorts of Middle Eastern Muslims in New Zealand are not Arab. And so there's this strange confounding of what Muslim means and the kind of warmth towards these groups in New Zealand. Now, what's very clear is that this is largely a product of media reportage and the way that media, the more exposure that people have to media, the more they tend to have this a negative attitude to other groups and particularly to Muslims. So there's an interesting finding there, I think, that's perhaps contrary to what we might expect, that religious identification, strong religious identification, doesn't correlate to hostility to outsiders or to other religionists necessarily. Remembering that these are kind of on average numbers, right? You will find strongly identified religious people who are very hostile to other groups. But on average, that's not the way it breaks down. There are a bunch of other interesting metrics from the NZAVS data that suggest that the strength of religious identification is correlated to strong pro-social behaviours. So charitable giving, for example, is one of these, that highly religiously identified people tend to be significantly more giving of time and financial resources than do those who don't identify with a religion or those who are weakly identified with religion. And this is actually quite an important finding, because one of the things that we know is that higher levels of charitable giving are also linked to subjective well-being. People's sense of subjective well-being correlates quite strongly to the extent to which they are charitable, both in terms of time and financial generosity. Now, it may be, actually, that it is the charity rather than the religion that drives that sense of well-being. In fact, our data tends to suggest that it's the charity factor that links most strongly to the well-being. Nevertheless, I think it's really significant that religious identification and community mobilises that kind of charitability quite substantially. What I'm not wanting to say here is that the story about being strongly religious in New Zealand is all benevolent, and that it's all a story of pro-social values and pro-social activity. Whilst strong religious identification is linked with a bunch of important pro-social values that have significant benefits to New Zealand society and coherence and cohesion, there are also areas in which strong religious identification is linked to what we might see as quite antisocial values. So opposition to homosexual marriage and a willingness to go to war, those features are much stronger amongst highly identified religious people than amongst others. The question is why? Why would we have these strange, on the one hand, strong religious identification mobilising in pro-social ways, and on the other hand, in what seem like very anti-social ways, and in ways that seem quite contrary to some of the teachings of the traditions about peace-loving and peacemaking, for example? Why would strongly identified Christians express greater willingness to go to war than other New Zealanders when they profess to follow a Prince of Peace? It seems strange. One of the factors seems to be, I think, that what's at stake is transmission of cultural and religious values. And part of our New Zealand climate is such that perhaps there's something about the New Zealand situation in which there's not so much at stake for New Zealanders in being warm to migrants. Their traditions are not under threat, and that enables a kind of warmth that maybe in another situation religious commitments might be mobilised in other ways. There are parts of the world where religious outsiders are not welcomed by other religionists, and that's partly because of the threat that they pose. Perhaps New Zealand is just fortunate in being in an environment where outsiders don't really pose as much of a threat to the continuity of religious traditions in New Zealand, that people's religious commitments are mobilised in hostility. Maybe that's what explains some of the way that religious commitments mobilise against homosexual marriage, for example, and a willingness to go to war, because these are seen to be areas where transmission is at stake, family values, loyalty to the in-group, for example, that these things are under threat, and so therefore religion mobilises in particular ways. Now, the picture that I'm trying to paint here really is one where that I hope will be a little bit provocative and will help us to think about religion in ways that are not, not too stereotyped and not too buttonholing, but help us to probe and think about the religious dynamics in New Zealand with an open mind. What's clearly happening in New Zealand at the moment is that we are in flux religiously. There is massive religious change in terms of the way that people identify and the way that people think about what religion is, about how they connect with religious communities and traditions. I think we need to be careful in our assumptions about the secular state that we are in, that there is a proliferation of spiritual and religious values in New Zealand, notwithstanding the strength of the secular tradition and notwithstanding the growth of a non-religion trajectory. I'd like to think that what's occurring in New Zealand is that we would be progressing towards a more mature kind of secular society, characterised by what I'd call a post-secular openness, that is, a secularity that's marked by respect for diversity, appreciation of the potential resources of religion, and engagement with diversity rather than a kind of hard-edged repudiation of religion and highly committed religious people as being the problem. I wonder if that might be also wishful thinking in our present climate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Jeff. I'm to propose the vote of thanks to Jeff, and I've been listening to all that he said, and I get this general conclusion. To know where we're heading, we need to know where we are now. But having got that under your belt, two other things come up. The word flux and the word change occur in every second line of what you said and what our observation of the world is, that we can't really know where we're heading because there's just too much change going on. One of the things that struck me very strongly in questionnaires, both here and elsewhere, is the potential confusion over the term no religion. When you answered the census form and you put no religion, did you intend to signal that you had no religious affiliation or you had no religious disposition? These are two quite strongly different things, and you can be in any combination of those bits and pieces. But I want to quibble about, it's obvious that the world is having more people, more contact between cultural groups, and I don't think the hostility between these cultural groups is getting any less. Is that a good comment to make, that there's still latent hostility which is not going to go away anytime soon?
Well, I think what the data that we're finding, and look, I'm trying to keep to the data rather than my gut feelings, because I've voted the wrong way in too many elections lately to trust my gut instinct about how things are going to pan out. But I think the data is that there is hostility, and some of it is religiously inspired. There's also a lot of resources for peacemaking and reconciliation and relationship and community that religious communities somehow have something going on that the rest of society can learn from in terms of this bridge building.
So has anybody told the news media about these things?
Yeah.
They seem to be the chief enemy in this respect.
Well, it is unfortunate, I think, that the media narratives do drive certain understandings of religious communities, of religious traditions, of religious commitments that are often very, very unfair and very unhelpful, and they're conflict-driven. They're not actually primarily about how to build more cohesive, more loving kind of societies. They're more about where's the story, and the simplification of the character of Islam, the character of Islam in New Zealand, for example, is a classic example of that. But so too is the story about a kind of Christian-Muslim conflict. Yeah. I mean, there's much more efforts to understand and to relate and to transcend.
So behind
conflicts.
The headlines, there is a better story. Yeah. Now, enough questions from me. You're going to get some more of them later on. The panel questions. Now, in that little box on the back there with the red writing on it, if you've got a question to the panel, please get that in there ASAP. The questionnaire, when you've filled it in later on, pop it in that box there. And anybody who mentions the outcome of the All Blacks thing last night will be...
Hmm?
It's on now. Okay, right. Well, please keep that under your hat and don't...
You've all been following it on your phones, haven't you?
Yeah. Now, questions from the audience. I think, whoa, there are lots of questions.
Hello, John MacDonald. My understanding is that the evidence from the United States is that there are massive differences developing between maybe the under 30-year-olds and those, say, over 60. Now, what is happening in New Zealand in that respect?
Yeah, it's very clear that the religious identification in New Zealand, religious affiliation of younger New Zealanders is dramatically lower than those of older New Zealanders. So part of this 1% switch from Christian affiliation to no religion, that's mostly driven actually by younger people coming through. It's not mostly about people saying I'm no longer religious. The stronger shift is actually through younger people not identifying. And the other factor is this, as I mentioned, amongst the Christian NFTs, even those who do identify with religion, their views about what religion actually is are quite different to older New Zealanders. So there was a time in New Zealand to be Christian meant to be denominational. You couldn't really conceive of being Christian except through a kind of commitment to a particular tradition. That's what it really meant to be Christian. But actually that's not how most younger New Zealanders see Christianity. They don't interpret Christianity as an institutional or traditional form. They see it as some other kind of lifestyle or commitment. Yeah.
Jeff, Richard Peach. Do you think your metrics would be sharpened if you asked a question not about affiliation, but about church attendance? Because people can feel vaguely affiliated with something that they actually aren't a participant in at all. So I would like, I mean, if I was involved in that questionnaire, I'd like those questions to be added. That's question number one, is what do you think about that idea? The second question is, you mentioned that societies start to develop hostile attitudes to immigrants or to different religions, particularly Muslim religions, let's say, based on the threat that they proposed. Is there a level of presence in the population where a threat threshold is crossed?
Good questions. In relation to the first question, it's absolutely true that affiliation itself, it's really interesting, but it doesn't get us terribly far. The strength of identification is proving to be an incredibly powerful one, like a proxy. Like it really does distinguish between those who identify, but not very much, are radically different in many, many ways to those who identify but strongly. So that really does carve at a significant joint. The short answer is we do actually ask some of these other questions, but only in not every year. And so unfortunately some of the stuff that we've done, some of that analysis about prayer, the effect of Bible reading, how often and what it means to people, some of these questions are in the survey but on a rotating basis. So we will have a whole raft of studies coming out looking at these things over the next few years. In fact, from next year I'll be doing a bunch of those. In terms of the threshold, it's really an interesting question. I mean, in New Zealand, so in terms of sectarian tensions historically between Catholic and Protestant, it was in places where the balance between Catholic and Protestant was quite even that really occurred. Parts of South Auckland, parts of South Canterbury, these are where the conflicts happened. But you could go to some parts of New Zealand and the idea of sectarian tension between Catholic and Protestant, it just did not figure. The evidence is almost non-existent. But in these areas where the population balance became relatively even, that's where the stories were generated from largely. What the actual point of threat is, I don't know if there is a magic number, but it's clearly as there's enough of a proportion to feel like maybe they're taking our jobs, maybe they're, you know, going to control things.
Kia ora, Jeff. Doug Selman, psychiatrist, Christchurch. It's really refreshing to have data in a national religious discussion network conference like this. The AVS, did I detect that you've got about a 30% follow-up rate of your original sample?
So what happened, it started with 6,500 people, and then a bunch of booster samples were taken as more funding became available, up to about 20,000. And there's an attrition rate year on year of about, there's about 85% in subsequent years repeat. So there's actually, in terms of a longitudinal sample, actually quite low rates of attrition compared to comparable samples. But there are boosts.
Thank you. You've answered the question. It's very good. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Oh, sorry. Yeah, not 65,000. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 65,000 would be extraordinary. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Right.
Imagine filling those in.
Bob Stewart, social psychologist in Palmerston North. I had met a few years ago, or quite a number of years ago, I participated in a study with another colleague on comparison of liberal versus conservative Christians, sort of drilling down really in terms of the choice of identifying as Christian. In our case, in fact, it was a sample of Baptist ministers. The interesting thing that we found was that there was quite a difference in terms of measures of dogmatism, ethnocentrism, and general conservatism amongst those two groups, the evangelical identified Baptist ministers and the liberal identified Baptist ministers. Very, very strong, so that in fact the liberal ones were considerably less dogmatic and less ethnocentric, and generally had better measures of self-actualization. And I'm just wondering whether you were aware of any follow-up of that, because the findings were so strong. As I say, it's a number of years since this was done. And it interested us, you know, as we published it actually in several contexts, but I'd be interested in your comments on that.
Yeah, no, I'm not aware of any follow-up either on that or anything quite approximating it. But it's interesting, yeah. Yeah, it's what I don't want to... This global level data is kind of interesting. It pushes us into different kinds of questions to... When you have this kind of scale, you end up with different perceptions, right? When you look at particular groups, you do see massive variations. But one of the interesting factors, I think, of this larger study is the way that it shapes... You know, it pushes us to different kinds of analysis, and the way that, there is massive variation. So every single question that we answer, if you have a scatter plot, you know, there are people on every quadrant, and maybe some people in certain parts of the quadrant end up in certain kinds of jobs or kind of having certain kinds of influences. But overall, there's an extraordinary spectrum out of which we see different kinds of patterns to that kind of work that you refer to.
Shirley Dixon. Traditionally, for hundreds of years in Europe and continuing on into New Zealand, anti-Semitism has been a big factor in religious prejudice. And yet Jews and Judaism didn't appear anywhere.
In the study?
Yeah. Or in your slides, your figures?
Yep. So there are a couple of comments about that. One is in terms of just the numbers in our survey. So there are not sufficient numbers in the survey to largely provide us with a data about them as a particular cohort. They're very small, okay, even in census terms. In terms of the prejudice question, actually, we're conscious of that, and it's actually something that is going to be included in future waves of the NZAVS on that question, precisely for that reason, that it's a traditional prejudice, and it's actually one that has not gone away. And in some parts of the world, in Europe, there's a kind of resurfacing of that is problematic. So we are conscious of that and looking to include data on that in the future. Thanks very much.
Right.